is baryon and lepton asymmetry, or more precisely, maybe baryon asymmetry and leptogenesis. And in this talk, I shall try to review the theoretical basis and the basic idea of leptogenesis, which is behind this, and also some of the recent developments in this field. My own work has been in collaboration with Pasquale Di Bari and Michael Blumacher. Unfortunately, I have to start with an apology. During the last 2 or 3 years, we really had a boom, I would say, for leptogenesis in particular, and interesting new ideas for baryogenesis in general. And it is just impossible to cover all that or to give you even a realistic overview of what has been done. So all I can do is to skip from the beginning some, I think, important and interesting areas, which I just have no time to address. One is the connection between leptogenesis and models of neutrino masses, different realizations of the seesaw mechanism, and the question how all that fits into grand unified theories. We had some review talks here, and it was also extensively discussed at the seesaw conference here in Paris last week. Now then, there is an important issue, which is the connection between leptogenesis and lepton flavor changing processes like mu to e gamma, as was also discussed here at the conference, and electric dipole moments of, say, leptons, electron and muon, and how you can see that and how you relate the CP violation in these different observables. Finally, there have been a number of interesting new ideas also concerning non-thermal leptogenesis and other baryogenesis models related more to scalar field dynamics, like models of Affleck-Dein type, connection to inflation, or specific scenarios which you can have in supersymmetric theories. Unfortunately, that I also have to skip. So here's then the outline. I will start with a review of the basic idea and of baryogenesis and the theoretical basis also. I will then spend some time on the connection between neutrino masses and leptogenesis. I think this is what people will be most interested in here, since this is a neutrino conference. So I'll discuss what one can say in this, say, limited framework, and also what the theoretical uncertainties are here. Then I will briefly mention other extensions of that, other leptogenesis scenarios. And finally, there is a very important topic, I think. Eventually, the origin of the visible matter may, in fact, have a lot to do with what the nature of the dark matter is. And I don't have time to discuss that in detail, but I will briefly mention the results. So due to the results from the microwave background, we now have a remarkable, we now know now the baryon asymmetry, that means the baryon to photon ratio, with remarkable precision. We know it with a precision of, it's claimed to be a precision of 5%. And this corresponds to a measurement of the baryon asymmetry at a temperature of about 1 electron volt and a corresponding time of 10 to the 13 seconds, assuming standard cosmology. Now, for a number of years, we had already another number for the baryon asymmetry from nucleosynthesis, which has a much larger error, but still within errors appears to be consistent. Now, I think one should not forget that the second number is in fact measured at a much larger temperature, at the time of BBN, and corresponding to a time of 10 seconds, 1 second. So there are 6 orders of magnitude in temperature difference here. And just the fact that these two measurements are consistent, I think, is very remarkable, gives us confidence, really, in this standard model cosmology, and also gives us confidence for extrapolations. And the next thing, then, I think, on the agenda is really the baryon asymmetry. And as we know, since many years, there are 3 conditions. What you need is baryon number violation, CNCP violation, and a departure from thermal equilibrium. Now, these, I should say, are necessary conditions, but they are not sufficient. You have to check whether this is satisfied, but then you really have to see whether it works. And the connection then gives very interesting implications for for physics beyond the standard model. Now, there are a number of scenarios for biogenesis. There's a classical gut biogenesis, and leptogenesis is very close to this. There is also an interesting principle, the interesting possibility of electroweak biogenesis, which, however, is maybe somewhat disfavored by the large Higgs mass, and then there are interesting other models as well. But what is common to all of these, and I think this is something which one should really emphasize, is that there are two very important non-perturbative properties of the standard model, which are, in fact, sort of the basis for all these discussions. One is the nature of the electroweak transition. We know at temperatures of the order of the critical temperature of the electroweak transition, say around 100 GeV, there is a symmetry restoration. That means the Higgs vacuum expectation value, which gives mass to all elementary particles, evaporates. And as we now know, at least in the standard model, this is not a phase transition, it's just a smooth crossover. Since from LEP, we know that there is a lower bound on the Higgs mass of 114 GeV, and for Higgs masses above, say, 72 GeV, you really have this crossover behavior. So that means in the early universe, if the standard model is correct, we just move very smoothly from the Higgs phase to the high temperature symmetric phase without affecting the baryonic symmetry in any way. Now, in supersymmetric extensions, this may also be the case. There may be also first order phase transition. We don't know yet. But what happens then is that as we go to this high temperature phase, baryon electron number violating processes get into thermal equilibrium. And in fact, we then have a connection between asymmetries in baryon electron number. So the basis, the processes which then take place in this high temperature phase are given by the TOF determinant. You have in the standard model all the left-handed fermions which participate in that. You can take any subset of these lines as incoming, the rest as outgoing. All these processes are possible. They conserve B minus L, but they change a baryon electron number by a multiple of 3. Now, there have been detailed studies of the temperature range in which such processes are in thermal equilibrium, and there's now some agreement that this should be the case between temperatures of about 100 GeV, that's above the electroweak transition, and say 10 to the 12 GeV. The second number is also important because it matters whether you generate the baryon asymmetry, or say something like electron asymmetry at a higher temperature or not. If it's at a higher temperature, it's then later converted into baryon asymmetry. If it's in a temperature in this range, it's immediately distributed over all degrees of freedom. So we have this connection between B asymmetry, B minus L, and lepton asymmetry with coefficients of order 1, which suggests that lepton number violation is needed to explain the cosmological baryon asymmetry. In fact, in the simplest classes of models, this is really true. However, there are also exceptions. You can have extensions where you can generate an asymmetry also with Dirac neutrinos and a conserved lepton number. Now, suppose you have now some lepton number violation, then, as you also see from this relation, it can only be weak. Since if it would be strong in its thermal equilibrium, you would wipe out any asymmetry and nothing would be left. So it's the interplay between these two conflicting conditions which leads then finally to important constraints on neutrino masses. And then there is, of course, the seesaw mechanism, which leads to leptogenesis, as suggested by Fukugida and Yanagida almost 20 years ago. As we heard many times at this conference, adding three right-handed neutrinos to the standard model gives us as mass eigenstates Majorana neutrinos, two sets, three heavy and one and two and three, three light, mu1, mu2, mu3. And if you just make a simple estimate, relate the breaking of B minus L to grand unification, you conclude that the mass of the heaviest of those neutrinos may be around 10 to the 15 GeV, which via this seesaw formula gives you for the mass of the lightest one, the heaviest of the light neutrinos, something like 0.01 EV. Now, this is of the order of the masses which you, which we see in neutrino oscillations. And I think this is what makes the field really exciting, because we can hope to see in neutrino physics, to probe with neutrino physics, really the grand unification scale. Now, if you look closer at this scenario, it turns out that this lightest of the heavy Majorana neutrinos is really, in many respects, an ideal object to generate the baryonic symmetry. First of all, it has no gauge interactions, therefore it is weakly coupled to the thermal plasma and can satisfy the order of equilibrium condition which you need. Its decays into leptons and antileptons can generate the lepton asymmetry, which is then turned into the baryon asymmetry partially. And finally, if you look at simple models of neutrino masses and see what amount of baryon asymmetry you would get, it shows, you see, that you can in fact easily understand the right order of magnitude of the baryon asymmetry, which in the end you get. Now, there's been much work on this by several groups since maybe about 1996, and it's impossible for me to quote this here or to give proper references, but maybe I should point out that originally, largely the motivation for this work was not so much neutrino physics, rather it was the fact that due to the large bound on the Higgs mass from LEP, electroweak baryogenesis in fact looked problematic. And looking for something else, this appeared to be an attractive possibility. If you look at these early papers, you also find that light neutrino masses were in fact favored by this scenario. But then after the measurement really of the atmospheric neutrino mass scale, we got a boom on leptogenesis models. And I think in the last few years, we really have made a lot of progress. So let's now look at the first basic quantity of this, just the CP asymmetry. That means the width, the partial decay width of heavy neutrinos into lepton minus the one into antileptons divided by the sum. There is a simple formula for this which you can write down. It's related to the imaginary part of a product of the light neutrino mass matrix and the Dirac neutrino Yukawa couplings. And if you now make a very rough estimate before really going into long calculations, and you assume that this matrix is dominated by the largest eigenvalue, you find a simple expression like this. This is just the light neutrino mass. You use the CISO formula once more, and you find that the CP asymmetry is, say, something like 0.3 times the ratio of the heavy neutrino masses. Now, this prefactor, say, 0.1, and not knowing anything, assuming that such a hierarchy here is similar to the hierarchy which you see elsewhere within the quark lepton families, you may put a value of 10 to the minus 5 here, and you find a CP asymmetry of 10 to the minus 6. Combining this with a dilution factor, which you get from the photon, the increase of photons in a co-moving volume between baryogenesis and today, gives you a factor of, say, 10 to the minus 2 here, and then estimating the efficiency factor of 0.1 gives you this number. So that means in some sensible model which you get in neutrino physics, you can really understand quantitatively the order of magnitude where it comes from. There are other models where it doesn't work. And in fact, there has been a lot of work on various classes of models in the last few years. And this just shows that this whole thing, on the one hand, it's possible to really understand quantitatively the baryon asymmetry. And on the other hand, you really learn something about the pattern of neutrino masses from this. Now, what is also important is the mass of the lightest of the heavy ones, which drives the baryon asymmetry. And it gives you the temperature where this baryogenesis takes place, which is about 10 to the 10 GeV. I will come back to this large temperature because this is important in connection with the Gravitino problem and implications for dark matter. So then I would say the simplest naive picture which you can get from this is that after recombination nucleosynthesis and the electroweak transition, the next period is then around, say, 10 to the 10 GeV or time 10 to the minus 26 seconds, where in fact, in connection with neutrino properties, you generate the baryon asymmetry. So given this qualitative picture, let's look at this process a little bit more quantitatively. Now, what you know, say, from the textbook, any textbook like Kolb and Turner, is that what is crucial to understand these processes is, in fact, how close you are to thermal equilibrium. This is usually given by the ratio of the decay widths of such a particle and the Hubble parameter. And it's convenient now here in this case to parameterize this in terms of an effective neutrino mass which looks similar like the Caesar formula, mass, which varies between the two, the lightest and the heaviest eigenvalue, typically of the light neutrinos, and a reference mass, which turns out to be 10 to the minus 3 eV. And already at this point, it's interesting that these two observed mass scales are close to this mass of 10 to the minus 3, which give the hope that, in fact, baryogenesis may be describable as a process close to equilibrium, and therefore really as a theoretically well. Now you have to do the Boltzmann equations, which depend on decay processes, scattering processes, and washout processes in the usual way. You find the typical rates in the plasma. This is a plot, similar ones that have been produced by many authors. And maybe the most interesting, you compared the rates with the Hubble parameter here, and maybe the most interesting aspect of this is that you have here in this washout rate sort of a kink at small temperatures, large values of Z. And that, in fact, depends on the absolute neutrino mass scale here. And if you move that up, this thing moves up and eventually makes baryogenesis impossible. And that gives, finally, a bound on the neutrino masses. To study that in detail, you have to look at these rates and see how they depend on the neutrino parameters. And in fact, the decay, the scattering, and part of the washout depend just on this M1 tilde, whereas the remaining part of the washout depends on the absolute neutrino mass scale. Now, you can then just work this out. You find the typical plot for the generation of a baryon asymmetry, and for reasonable values of the parameters, you get the right number out. Now, what is important is that the CP asymmetry, which enters this process, satisfies, in fact, a maximum, and which does depend just on this effective neutrino mass and the heavy neutrino mass and also the absolute neutrino mass scale, and not on all the rest, the phases and the angles of the light neutrino mass matrix. And therefore, you can get the maximal baryon asymmetry given a certain neutrino mass matrix in terms of this maximal asymmetry and an efficiency factor, which I discussed before. Requiring now that this is larger than the observed, this maximal asymmetry which you can get for a given pattern of neutrino masses is larger than the observed baryon asymmetry, gives you a bound on the neutrino masses, which is, in fact, turns out to be about, we'll come to the errors a little later, about 0.21, and the lower mass, a lower bound on this heavy mass of a few times 10 to the 8. So you have a three-parameter system. You have an observable depending on three parameters. And if you look at this in the plane of the heavy neutrino mass and this effective light neutrino mass, you get a loud region which shrinks as you increase the absolute neutrino mass scale. And for a mass scale of about 0.2 eV, which corresponds individually to about 0.12 electron volt, you find a bound. You cannot generate any baryon asymmetry then anymore. Now, as we learned this morning, so you have a bound of about 0.12 eV. We heard this morning we heard at this conference a lot about the prospect to measure more precisely the absolute neutrino mass scale in neutrinoless gamma beta decay experiments in the coming years, and also with Katrin. And then there are the exciting prospects from cosmology, which large-scale structure and microwave background, which together may eventually lead us really down here to this region to test this experimentally. Now, if you see something which roughly works, you may wonder, how well do I really understand this? Such an error, if I put it, is it true or not? And if you follow this question, then you have a little problem, because you find, if you look at all the complications, that what you really need is a full quantum mechanical description of a non-equilibrium process in the early universe, which is a challenging problem, and it is in fact interesting even without leptogenesis. Now, here, at the moment, what we have is one possibility to start with would be the Kalanov-Baym equations, when at the moment we have just classical Boltzmann equations, then you have to look about the various corrections, and I think this will give work for the theorists in the coming years. Now, there have been two detailed studies recently which address some of these issues. One detailed analysis was carried out by Giudice and collaborators, and the main qualitative point here is a resummation of large thermal masses, which become very important if you go to temperatures larger than the mass of the heavy neutrino. Now, if you do that, in fact, the picture, as I described it so far, changes qualitatively. And in addition to the decays of the heavy neutrino, you get at very large temperatures now, say, decay of a heavy thermal Higgs into such a heavy neutrino and a thermal lepton. Now, this is an important, I think conceptually important problem, which is currently under discussion. For the bound, it is not so important because for that, the temperatures below the mass of this heavy neutrino are mostly relevant, and these authors find claim now an upper bound of 0.15 eV. Now, in another analysis focused on analytic solutions of the Boltzmann equations, in order to get a better understanding of the dependence of this whole process on the neutrino parameters. And maybe the most interesting aspect of this is, one result of this is summarized in this plot, and you see there's a clear separation between values of these neutrino masses above 10 to the minus 3 and below. This efficiency factor, which essentially is a baryon asymmetry, can vary over several orders of magnitude if you are below. You are strongly dependent on initial conditions, and you are dependent on some theoretical uncertainties. And remarkably, all this disappears if you go to larger values of neutrino masses. So it is somewhat amazing that if the neutrino masses, the true neutrino masses, would have sort of the size indicated by the mass differences, would be of the same order, something like 0.01, 0.05 eV, then you are completely in a safe region and you get the baryon asymmetry independent, almost independent of initial conditions. So you have a safe prediction. So to summarize this part, what have we learned so far from all this leptogenesis analysis about the absolute neutrino mass scale? Say we have an upper bound of the light neutrino masses of about 0.1, a lower bound on the heavy one of, say, 10 to the 9 GeV, and with an arrow, well, we don't really know it, but if you take these two studies as a guideline, we have, say, an arrow maybe of 0.03 eV. Now, if you compare that with statements which you find in the literature maybe 10 years ago, essentially based on the same equations, you find that the heavy mass, neutrino mass, could be 1 TeV, and the heaviest of the light neutrinos could be, say, 10 KeV. So there are 5 orders of magnitude here and 9 orders of magnitude here. So, 6 orders of magnitude here. So what is the difference? Where does this come from? Now, you can go through the analysis which I described. You can do an interesting exercise. In fact, what plays a crucial role in this analysis is a known value of the atmospheric neutrino mass scale. The square root of this, we now know, is about 0.05 eV. Suppose you would not know this. Then you can do the same analysis and see what bounds you then get. So you get 100, roughly 100 eV in this case, and say 10 to the 6 eV here. There are still a few orders of magnitude missing, which have to do with the proper treatment of the Boltzmann equations and these washout processes. So that means, roughly, if you think about the progress here, it's shared on a logarithmic scale, roughly equally shared between experiment and theory. And now we know that successful leptogenesis, independent of initial conditions, works in such a neutrino mass window. Now, what if you don't find neutrino masses in this window? What if we find quasi-degenerate neutrino masses say, of 0.4 eV? Then what we need are significant modifications of this leptogenesis, minimal leptogenesis scenario, and or the seesaw mechanism. There are several possible ways out. One is to add Higgs triplets to this, which was studied by several authors, and you essentially completely lose the connection to the light neutrino masses, and something like 0.3 eV for the masses and such a lower bound become possible. Or even more dramatic, you go to resonant leptogenesis, where you assume a very strong degeneracy of the heavy Majorana neutrinos. So if you here have a degeneracy, say, of 10 to the minus 10, then you can account for low values of the heavy neutrino masses and also light neutrino masses of 0.1 eV. Unfortunately, I have no time anymore for a topic which is very important. It's the implications for dark matter. If you are intrigued by the way this simple leptogenesis mechanism works, then you have to worry about this gravitino problem and this large reheating temperature. And there have been quite a number of papers on this recently, and in fact, it favors, I would say, a gravitino as the lightest superparticle LSP. That's really one interesting possibility which can avoid this clash and which different groups are now studying. So this brings me to the end, to the summary. There have been theoretical developments, I think, over almost two decades concerning the electroweak phase transition and these far-long processes. And this has established the connection between baryon and lepton number in the high temperature phase of the standard boiler. The fact that the transition, electroweak transition, is smooth also implies that if you generate some asymmetry, say by leptogenesis or some other mechanism, it will not be completely altered at the electroweak phase transition. Now, the decay of heavy Majorana neutrinos is a natural way to explain the observed asymmetry, and it works in such a window for neutrino masses. Quasi-degenerate masses would considerably require a considerable modification, and I think this whole thing strongly favors gravitinos as the lightest supersymmetric particle.
Thank you very much. If I have 2 minutes for questions. No question, please. Where?
What would happen with these models if reheating temperature is much smaller than that scale? For example, it's 100 GeV or 10 GeV.
Well, for 10 GeV, if the reheating temperature is only 10 GeV, you can forget about everything I said. I mean, then this whole connection between baryon lepton number violation is irrelevant, and then you need some completely different mechanism. But it's very difficult, I think, to generate realistically a baryon asymmetry at such low temperatures. Although there are some interesting proposals, but I mean, I really think it's difficult.
Can you give a few more details about this implication for gravitino as a dark matter?
Yes, thank you. Very much, yeah.
That's a cheat.
I mean, the problem here is the following. I mean, there is sort of a clash. I mean, this leptogenesis, at least in its simplest form, requires that the temperature, that you can extrapolate the hot Big Bang to a temperature of about 10 to the 9 GeV. Now, the nice thing about the gravitino is that you cannot fiddle around with its couplings. They are fixed by symmetry. So you can really calculate the gravitino abundance. And then what is usually assumed, if the gravitinos are unstable and then have a late decay into the true WIMP, then this just screws up nucleosynthesis. So that's a problem, which is known since 20 years or even longer. Now, a possibility to avoid that is that, in fact, you make the gravitino the lightest one. And, in fact, that is also very natural, I would say, theoretically, for many reasons. It would put the whole problem of dark energy, of dark matter, all somehow into the gravity sector. Then you have to worry about the next lightest particles, and you have to worry about how you explain the dark matter in terms of gravitinos. And there have been a number of papers on that recently, how to explain the abundance of gravitinos, the right one, so that you get the amount of dark matter. And in fact, you can even derive some bounds in the supersymmetric context, upper bounds, on the Gluino mass for such scenarios, which should be good news for LHC if supersymmetry exists. And then you have to worry about BBN, and you can see there are a number of papers on this recently that you can satisfy these BBN constraints. So I think it's just, well, theoretically in any case, but gravitino dark matter is an interesting possibility. But in this case, just the large temperature forces you to think in this direction.
Thank you very much. And let's thank again the speaker.
Sure.
And